It's the saddest day in America, the come down after the birthday. July 5th. Good morning, everybody. It is Friday on this episode of Baseball Barbacast. We will be talking some July 4th gobbledygook. The Yankees get swept in a three-game series for the first time all season. All-star starters are announced. And, of course, the good, the bad, and the ugly. Baseball Barbacast coming up. Hello and welcome to Baseball Barbacast, the only baseball podcast in the world that knows the July 4th scene in the Sandlot wasn't real. I'm Jake Mintz. That's Jordan Schusterman. And there's no way there was enough light under those fireworks to play a baseball game. It's time the kids of America knew the truth.
Wow, what a good way to start this July 5th episode of Baseball Barbacast. Yeah, we've talked about that scene. It's just, it's cool in theory, but you ain't going to be able to see the ball. That just seems pretty dangerous. Just enjoy the fireworks. Just enjoy the fireworks. It's fine.
In my opinion, it is the baseball version of Santa Claus and the Tooth Fairy, where when you're very young, believing that this is real is a good thing. But once you get to a certain age, the truth must come out and your parents or a guardian or an older mentor must tell the youth that, no, you cannot play baseball at night under just fireworks. You need lights.
Yep, I agree. Again, we want to be safe when we're playing our July 4th baseball. And I think that's also why, you know, most of the games yesterday were day games. So people, you know, teams weren't tempted to try this in a major league setting. I think that really would have been dangerous. It is Friday. We have a lot to talk about. The Yankees are scuffling. Christian Walker is doing the opposite of scuffling, at least whenever he is in Dodger Stadium. We have our all-star starters have been announced. We'll get the rest of the teams on Sunday, so prepare, you know, hold back your that guy got snubbed takes until Sunday night. Don't worry, I'll be participating in that as well. We have a few more home run derby thoughts. No more official participants as of us recording this on Friday morning, but we do have some more news about that. And then it is Friday, so we will give you the good, the bad, and the ugly, of which I am very, very, very excited. But Jake, we must begin as always. If the Yankees are relevant, whether they're good, they're bad, let's start in the Bronx. I know you have been away from home, away from Yankee Stadium the last little bit, so you haven't been around them in the last week or so. But they're struggling. They miss you, man. They need you. They need you in that press box to be playing well, apparently.
It's me, baby. It's all about me. Jordan, do you know what the biggest fan base in America is? The second biggest fan base is the Yankees. And the first biggest fan base is everyone who hates the Yankees. And whenever the Yankees are riding the struggle bus, the other half of America rejoices. Just a quick aside, by the way, America, like, we think we're the Reds, but we're the Yankees.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. No, that's true. That's true. We like to think it's funny, right? Because the Reds, even yesterday, I think, you know, we've seen them try and adopt America's team as their moniker. We've seen a lot of teams do this, but the Reds have, over the last couple of years, you know, we've seen them do this as kind of a scrappy young bunch. But it is America's team against America's team. And America's team went into the Bronx and told the Yankees, as American as it gets, the Yanks said, you're not very good. This is actually not too much of an issue. The Cincinnati Reds, who, I don't know if you saw this, but I should have tweeted the clip out. I know Robert Orr tweeted about this, but when the Yankees lost yesterday, got swept, the disgust with which Michael Kay said, and the Yankees dropped this one and they get swept by the Cincinnati Reds. Now I'm adding the sound effect, but the tone was basically exactly that. It was both dismissive and disappointing and condescending and all the things you would want from a Yankees, you know, adjacent voice. But yeah, man, I mean, this is an extension of a pretty rough stretch here for the old Yanks.
Two main things have happened. Let's say three, just to kind of convey this to people who maybe aren't following the Yankees every day and are wondering, how did this team go from at one point having the best record in baseball to relative rubbish? Well, number one, Gerrit Cole came back. And usually that would be a reason that would be good news. However, what has bizarrely happened is the second Gerrit Cole got back, the rest of the rotation kind of was like, well, I don't have to do anything anymore. Like, Gerrit Cole's back. And since then, since Cole got back, Yankee starters have like a 25,000 ERA, right? Compared to before, where I think it was like under three. So the starting pitching has regressed. I don't think they're as bad as they've been over the last month, but I don't think they're as good as they were for the first two. The real value is somewhere in between. And the other thing that's happened is what happened last year. And that is that every hitter not named Judge or Soto has been pretty, pretty bad. Now, Ben Rice, who was called up a couple weeks ago, the pride of Dartmouth, he has looked pretty solid. Austin Wells has looked better recently. However, the rest of the lineup, Alex Verdugo, Anthony Volpe, Trent Grisham, just bad.
Yeah, I mean,
just not good.
And those two are, I think, the key ones to mention, right? Because as amazing as Judge and Soto have been all season, it was those two in particular over the first 6 weeks, you know, 2 months or so, that were also performing at, you know, maybe not all-star levels, but like very, very good hitters for Verdugo and Volpe. And they've just gone backwards so fast to where now you're just, and we already knew how much, you know, Glaber was struggling, and Rizzo's obviously a non-factor right now. He's been injured. Giancarlo was doing his job, and now he's hurt too. So the bottom kind of fell out on pretty much every part of their team very quickly. Now, they have built this incredible lead, this incredible record that means they're still in very strong position. But yeah, it's I would qualify this as scary hours in the wrong way.
And I believe they're only two games back still of the Orioles in the American League. Yeah. So, you know, it's not panic stations, but they just don't look like a division winning team over the last month. They have one of the records in baseball over that stretch. And, you know, it got to the point where they dropped Volpe down in the order a couple days ago, where he'd been leading off for most of the season, and now he's in the sixth spot. I mean, that's just an admission that something does need to change. But this is the concern with the Yankees going into the year, right? It's like, well, Judge is good, and Soto's, you know, pretty good. Those guys are all right. LOL. But the rest of this team doesn't inspire as much confidence, especially when you compare it to some other lineups in the American League, right? Particularly in Baltimore. And so I think the concern with the Yankees is legitimate. However, there's always this balance with any team going through a rough stretch that has a lot of talent on it. It's like, how much do you panic, right? Especially internally. How much do you say this is natural regression? These are the ups and downs of a season. Let's stay the course. Or do you say we need to make changes now? And by changes, I mean like adjustments in specific players' mechanics or approaches or pitch mixes, you know, or do you just believe in what got you there? And I think that is something that the Yankees kind of do need to take a deeper look at and see.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think over the last month, while there's only two games behind Baltimore, I think what we've seen is I am becoming more and more convinced that Baltimore is the better team, whereas there was that stretch for a month and a half where it was like, these are two of the best teams in baseball. It depends on what day you watch them. You might think one's better than the other. This could be an epic division race, right? And it still might end up being that. But right now, I certainly have more questions about New York than Baltimore. I think that is fair to say. And how they, you know, act at the deadline, I think, will maybe indicate how much they believe there is a gap to be closed with Baltimore.
And evidence that people are not feeling loose and free in Yankee world came yesterday before the game, where there was a national anthem standoff. Now, for those of you who don't know what that is, it is a goofy baseball tradition where players on the line after the anthem will wait as long as possible to be the last person on the line. Now, it is team versus team, so whichever team in theory has the last person standing on the line, they win. They win the standoff. Now, very often this doesn't turn into anything and people walk away after a couple seconds. But every once in a while, a couple times a year, it gets pretty ridiculous to the point where guys are just standing out on the field and the umpires need to start gesturing to these players who are not actually starting in the game that they need to skedaddle and get their butts back to the dugout. This happened yesterday at Yankee Stadium on July 4th. So, I mean, this is the Super Bowl of anthem standoffs.
Yeah. And I would say that I feel like this is the day when everyone should be doing this. I think that this is a bit that can, I think my favorite thing about this bit Now, this goes counter to what I just said, but is how random it is. Like, sometimes it'll just be a random Tuesday afternoon in Kansas City and these two guys just won't get off the field. Like, that's funny to me. But this is really the opposite of that. This is when you really bring out, pull out all the stops. Now, the characters involved here, Graham Ashcraft, and I believe Carson Spires on the Red side, and Ian Hamilton and Cody Poteet of the New York Yankees, both of whom are currently on the IL. Now, the Reds, you know, putting out an active player there, you know, is a little bit more serious. But, you know, since Ian Hamilton and Cody Poteet are on the IL, they got nowhere to be. they don't have to worry about anything. They could stand there all day. But Graham Ashcraft ultimately prevailed, I believe.
And what's great about this bit is that it is so stupid and like eye-rolly and embarrassing and childish until you win. And that's the thing. Like, while it's going on, if you're in the dugout and your teammates are doing this, like, guys, get off the field. This is so dumb. But the second that your boys take the W, I mean, it's joy. It's a party. It's happy birthday, right? And we saw that yesterday where, you know, there's a clip of, like, Aaron Boone telling his own guys to get off the field, right? And then the Reds end up winning. And then the dugout goes crazy. Now, we had, you know, shouts out to Jonathan Boy, John Boy Media, friend of the show, Jonathan, you know, he is a Yankees fan and he posted a little salty Yankees take yesterday. And like, I think, first of all, no notes, right? Like, this is part of why over recent years I've grown to like Yankees fandom as like a dynamic, because it's so different. It is genuinely different than the 29 other fan bases. You know, the essence of Jonathan's take was like, you know, we can't be doing this. Like, this is what bad teams do. Right. We can't have two guys on the IL, you know, doing this. And I get that. I get that, you know, it's all about winning and greatness. But at the same time, I'm like, boy, I just once want the Yankees to have a season where they lose like 100 games. And just to see what happens to people following this team.
Because, we thought we had that last year was the closest we might ever get, you know. And it's, it's put them in a weird headspace. But, you know, he was properly roasted for that take, and that's fine. And
the thing. My take with this is everyone did their job. Right. Everyone did their job here, right? Like, the Reds won. Aaron Boone told his guys to get off the field. Good on the injured Yankees pitchers for trying to have a little bit of fun. Good on John Boy. Like, you're the Yankees fan. That's good. You are like Yankees fan. Essentially, like, in some ways, it's probably not fair. But like, he's a very high profile Yankees fan, right? And he did the correct take that the Yankees fans should have. And then everyone else was like, this is silly. Great. No notes. Everyone played their role. Let's move forward.
Let me hit the Reds quickly. We'll talk about Red Sox Yankees coming up this weekend at the end of the show. Just quickly on the Reds. Obviously a massive series win for them, but really what it is to get some momentum going into an incredible opportunity going into the All-Star break. The Reds are 42-45 right now. There's still a few games back in the NL postseason mess. However, 10-game homestand going into the All-Star break, 3 against the Tigers, 4 against the Rockies, 3 against the Marlins. Gotta win 7 of those. Maybe 8, maybe not. Like, this is the opportunity to get back to 500, to get some momentum, to remind. We've talked about the Reds. They have one of the sixth best run differential in the National League. Like, this is a solid team. The record still doesn't reflect that because they've been so inconsistent. You have to take care of business here if you are going to have a chance in the second half. This is the opportunity here. It's not going to get easier than this. And I hope that they can seize it because the Reds are fun when they're in the mix here. And so we'll see if that actually remains true.
Red Sox coming into the Bronx this weekend. I can't remember the last time I was so interested by a Yankees-Red Sox series. I mean, we got some real spice here. Red Sox crawling back. They're down 4 in the loss column. Another little sweep, and we are officially on panic watch for the Yankees, at least for now. All right, let's go from the East Coast to the West Coast. Let's hop off the plane at LAX with a dream and my cardigan. Welcome to the land of Christian Walker, because boy, oh boy, the Arizona Diamondbacks first baseman has been en fuego at Chavez Ravine. He hit, 5 home runs in this series,
yes,
against the Los Angeles Dodgers, 1 in the first game on Tuesday, 2 on Wednesday, 2 on Thursday. You know, you know who the real Christian Walker is, Jordan?
Well, tell me.
Christian Walker.
First of all, this extends back to the first series, and he had homers in the previous two games in Dodger Stadium earlier this year. So that's five straight games with a home run. If you go on Sarah Lang's timeline right now, she's churning out some Christian Walker at Dodger Stadium fun facts that are just almost too ridiculous to be believed. I mean, sure, do these belong in, you know, the overly specific stats thread? Yes, although Sarah Lang's kind of gets an eternal pass. It's funny because I text her about these, and sometimes she wants to end up in the thread, and then other times I'm like, no, this is your job more than anybody else, so you get to post whatever you want. However, stats like this: Christian Walker's seven home runs over a five-game span, tied for the most in a five-game span against the Dodgers ever, tied with 0-3 Todd Helton, 0-1-0-2 Barry Bonds, and this Willie Mays fella in 1958. Okay, so that's a pretty good. That's a pretty good one. Nine home runs in his first nine games against the Dodgers this season is the second most all time in a single season, behind only Willie Sargent in 1971. But this is really where I get to, because this is not just this season. He has been dominating at Dodger Stadium for essentially his entire career. And I was curious about, you know, okay, OPS visiting teams. Do you have guys that come to mind in terms of players in visiting ballparks? I'm just going to do active. I mean, I could go all line, but this is just an easy stat head. Basically, minimum 100 plate appearances in a road ballpark. I was curious where Christian Walker ranks in terms of just greatest visiting, you know, destruction.
So there are three that come to mind. One is Paul Goldschmidt against the Dodgers.
Yes, yes. His right. was against Kershaw specifically, but that is a good one, though, yeah.
Goldschmidt against Kershaw, didn't he like dominate Tim Lincecum? Am I misremembering? Yes. That's like a different thing,
but no, that's accurate. Yeah,
okay. Goldschmidt comes to mind, and then you know, as someone who watches the Orioles a lot, Randall Grichuk in Camden Yards would come to mind.
Okay,
and then Mountcastle in Toronto comes to mind.
Okay, so Grichuk is absolutely spot on. That is an incredibly random but great pull. Grichuk, 1069 OPS in Camden Yards in 122 plate appearances. That is 34th among active players for a single visitor. So that is a great pull. Now, I'm not sure Mountcastle in Toronto is a great one, although I'm not sure. Oh, no, he is. Okay, so Mountcastle's at 982. So he's not quite there, although obviously, you know, for him, that's pretty impressive. But Christian Walker, after his amazing performance last night, is now up to an 1184 OPS in Dodger Stadium in 152 plate appearances, slugging 783, which I believe is the highest. It is 47 hits, 19 home runs. So it is the highest slugging percentage of really anyone in a visiting ballpark among active players with a real sample size.
So this is essentially people buying a vacation home, right? This is like, oh, you know, anytime I'm in town, I treat this place like I live there.
Yes. And so we'll see if this sustains. I guess they won't be back at Dodger Stadium this year because they've already played their two series. But that is just a remarkable, remarkable thing. Other ones at the top here: Jose Ramirez at Yankee Stadium. I did not realize 1273 OPS. Freddie Freeman in St. Louis. Mookie Betts in Kansas City. That's a random one. Juan Soto at Citi Field, of course. And then Mike Trout. Mike Trout in Seattle was one. He's the only one that knows how to hit in Seattle. In almost a full season, over 400 plate appearances for Mike Trout in Seattle, an 1143 OPS, which is just hilarious, even for
which
Mike Trout.
Adjusted for ballpark must be ludicrous.
It's completely outrageous. So anyway, Christian Walker, a very impressive. Diamondbacks take the series in Dodger Stadium, and Dodgers, you know, they're fine. I'm not as worried about them as the Yankees, but they've certainly, you know, not looked awesome recently.
One quick update before we get to the All-Star starters. It was the Barbecue Bowl this week. Jake versus Jordan, Orioles versus Mariners in Seattle. O's taking the first two games. The Mariners offense just puttering along. But then on July 4th, the Mariners woke up, baby. One if by land, two if by sea, seven if by marine. No, that was a swing and a miss. Mariners kicked those ass yesterday. Julio Rodriguez has woken up finally, Jordan.
Let's hope so, man. I mean, two of his most impressive batted balls of the season, which is like, okay, well, that's not a good thing, right? The fact that he could have two of those in the same game is both encouraging and kind of upsetting. He didn't have a double in the gap the whole year before this game. Yeah. Go pull up his spray chart. I know that sounds impossible. He had like six doubles before yesterday, and they were all either down the line or like over the center fielder's head. So that is just how off Julio Rodriguez has been. Also hits a homer. Steals third later in the game. Garver hits a home run. They got a solid start from Bryce Miller. So, yeah, of course, you know, with as bad possible vibes you could get, with the offense looking as bad as ever, they managed to win the game that Corbin Burns starts. But obviously nice to see them kind of come alive. I stand by a lot of what we said on the podcast earlier this week. But it's nice to see them. And obviously Julio in particular, it'd be nice to see him kind of get going before the All-Star break.
Did you see that Fox is doing a Julio documentary? Did you see this?
I did. Yeah.
And they're releasing it.
I don't know if
that's like
out yet, but yes, no. There's no shortage of Julio content.
So that's what I'm saying is Fox did this Julio documentary and is releasing it like right before the All-Star game. And I think that the point of it was to be like, here's Julio. And like, you can't plan for that. Like, Julio felt like a good bet to be in the All-Star game.
I would have expected him to be in the All-Star game too. Yeah. So, but maybe he can, you know, go off for a week and a half and make it feel a little bit more timely. That was definitely important. Important win to salvage one there. But yeah, I mean, the Orioles, the home run that Gunnar Henderson hit, oh my God. He is really, really something special. So anyway, good to see the Mariners not completely embarrass themselves in that series, but the Orioles are certainly the better team. All right, Jake, let's get to it's the All-Star games coming up. We will be in Texas a week from now, which is kind of terrifying, but very exciting. The All-Star game starters were announced, and let's banter about them, because to be honest, Jake, I don't really think we're going to talk about this really at all again after this. Like, we don't really care that much about the game. The rosters themselves as a whole, once they expand beyond the starters, you kind of end up focusing on everybody else, because most of the time the starters are so obvious. A lot of the guys were just so used to being all-stars. So like, there's not much to say about Aaron Judge starting in the All-Star game. Like, yeah, okay, great. But there are some other ones. We have a handful of first-time all-star starters that we did want to hit. So let's run through, before we take a break, let's run through those starters and give some thoughts.
I think it's also worth just briefly a quick discussion about what we want the all-star starters to be, right? What is the point of this whole thing? It is a showcase event. And so what I would like this game to be, the starters to be, is not necessarily the most deserving based upon the first half. Maybe that's not fair, but that's just how I feel. It's like, I want this game to be a showcase for people who don't get to watch baseball all the time, or who don't watch baseball all the time, so that they can see a glimpse, a one-day glimpse of some of the most exhilarating, captivating characters in our sport. And so that is like fun players, iconic players. And then every year we get a couple guys where we look back and we just kind of go, wow, LOL, these dudes started the All-Star game, right? And just quickly, I went back and did some research. 2019, Jorge Polanco and Carlos Santana. 2021, Adam Frazier and Jesse Winker. 2022, Jock Peterson and Alejandro Kirk. 2023, Orlando Arcia and Josh Young, right? So this, you get like two of these every year. And this is because it's fan voting. So whatever teams are doing really well in the moment, we'll often have a player or two where it's like, that's kind of weird. I don't really think we got that this year. Maybe time will say otherwise. Profar is the one that stands out. But without further ado, I'm just going to run through the American League roster, and then we could talk about it a little bit. Okay? Behind the dish, Adley Rutschman. Freaking duh.
First of many All-Star games started by Adley Rutschman.
Adley Rutschman, catcher. First base, Vlad Guerrero Jr. He had a slow start, 937 OPS since June 1st. He's been outstanding. Second base, Jose Altuve. What a thing. I hope one day we, as a baseball world, can forgive him, because he is a delight and a fascinating baseball character. Shortstop, Gunnar Henderson, in his first All-Star game start over Bobby Witt Jr., which is probably the right move. I would have just had Bobby play second, but that's me. Third base, Jose Ramirez. Third start, which feels really low. I imagine that's because Alex Bregman probably got a lot of starts when the Astros were at their peak. And then the outfield, Aaron Judge, Juan Soto, and Steven Kwan. What a trio, right? What a trio.
So good. So good. I guess Judge will you know, will play center. We've seen him play plenty of center, but it is just an amazing combination. Yeah, just two of the greatest players, two potential Hall of Famers, right? And Stephen Kwan, hey, you know, our dear friend Stephen Kwan, maybe he'll be a Hall of Famer too. You know, if he hits 340 over a 15-year career, he could be a Hall of Famer. But what he is when you go to the All-Star game, you'll be like, why is that guy standing next to that guy?
This comparison is a great example of the different types of athleticism. Because if you watch Aaron Judge, if you literally you see Aaron Judge, you're like, that's an athlete. If you watch Juan Soto swing a bat, you're like, that's an athlete, right? Stephen Kwan's athleticism is, not to downplay the rest of his profile, but so much of it is just in his hands. It is his ability to move his hands around to get the bat where it needs to be. That is also athleticism. Now, it's not, you know, Usain Bolt style athleticism, but what Stephen Kwan is able to do in the box is worthy of praise and fascinating, and maybe not as overtly impressive as Aaron Judge hitting a ball 480 feet, but it is also an utter delight. Speaking of 480 feet, the DH for the American League is Yordan Alvarez.
Yes, obviously deserved there, but also the first time he gets to start because Shohei Ohtani is no longer in the American League. So congratulations to Yordan, who will get to start there. But that is the AL. Let's go to the National League, where William Contreras is starting behind the plate. Not his first All-Star game, because he did make it in Atlanta as kind of like a backup who, at the time, it was like, this is just a hot start. Like, clearly he's a good player, but is he really an All-Star? Like, I remember we kind of rolled our eyes at that, and he's like, no. I am actually even better than that. I'm one of the best catchers on earth, and now he will be, here he is. I guess he did start in 22 because he was it was a replacement though, I believe he was not voted as that, obviously. And then he ended up being in the lineup, to start the All-Star game in 22
as the DH. And what was cool, remember, he batted back to back with his brother, who was the starting catcher.
Yes. And by the way, his brother, you know, he was on an All-Star pace this year too, before his arm got broken. So I'm not sure I'm expecting him to be there with his brother this year, but William Contreras, very, very, very well deserving. Of course, the Brewers in first place for much of the season. He will be behind the plate. First base, Bryce Harper. Ever heard of him? Seventh All-Star start for him, or at least voted in as an All-Star starter. As we know, he has not, because of injuries, he has not actually gotten to represent the Phillies in an All-Star game at all. Is that actually accurate?
Correct. He has never worn a Philadelphia Phillies uniform at an All-Star game. He's been voted in. He did not make the All-Star team the year he won the MVP in 2021, which is particularly ridiculous.
Keynote there. Yeah.
Yeah. He's had some injuries the last, you know, couple years during the All-Star game. He is on the aisle right now. Whether or not he comes back to play in this game remains to be seen, but he was the top vote getter in the National League. At second base, Ketel Marte, starting his second All-Star game for the Arizona Diamondbacks. The most underrated player in baseball, the National League's Jose Ramirez. People are saying it, more and more people every day. I'm here in Delaware at the beach, Jordan. I'm walking down the ocean by the sand, and people are coming up to me and they're saying, Jake, Ketel Marte. Not enough people are talking about Ketel Marte. And I say, you're right. You're right, strange beach goer.
Hey, I wish what the scenario you described was accurate, because that is what Ketel Marte deserves. He deserves strangers on the Delaware beaches to be talking about his play. Now, I will say, though, it is not his first time starting an All-Star game, because in 2019, when the ball was a golf ball and he, you know, slugged nearly 600, he finished fourth in the MVP and started the All-Star game for the National League. Now, at the time, it was like, all right, like, career year for Ketel Marte, like, clearly a good player. But I love that he has now proven that again in a very real way. He's been just as good this year as he was in 2019, basically, which is an astonishing achievement, because that, not that it was a fluke thing, but it felt like it couldn't get any better than that version of him. And he's basically done that this year. He is outstanding.
And for a Diamondback to win the fan voting is impressive, just because that is not exactly a fan base. I know they were in the World Series a year ago. That's not a fan base that's like feeling great about their team right now, where, you know, it felt like for a second we were going to get eight Phillies in the starting lineup because they're rocking the vote. But what this tells me is that people saw Ketel Marte in October literally not get out ever. And they were like, that's one of the best players in baseball. That guy deserves to be in the All-Star game. And I love that because that is like how this is supposed to work.
Yeah, 100%. Now, granted, not a ton of other super compelling options in the National League. You know, Bryce Terang, Jonathan India has been amazing the last month, but still, I agree with you. I think it is a reflection of his national kind of status kind of rising up. Now, you mentioned, oh, we thought we'd just get all Phillies. Well, don't worry. We still have a couple more. We got Trey Turner at shortstop. No shock there. I mean, obviously, I think most people would rather see Ellie, but Trey Turner deserves it. And Alec Bohm. Alec Bohm is the real kind of breakout one here. And this is the one that he's certainly having an awesome season, but this is one too where this is a reflection of the team, I would say, of the team, you know, that he plays on and making sure that he is the starter for the All-Star game. I mean, maybe that's disrespectful. Maybe he is clearly the best third baseman in the National League. I think he has certainly a case for it. But either way, I mean, this is, again, for a guy that was the third overall pick, it's nice to see your third overall pick starting an All-Star game, because that's obviously what you're kind of dreaming of when you pick him.
I think you're kind of underselling him a little bit there. I mean, he has the third highest WRC plus in the National
League. I guess most of the two guys in the AL. So, yeah.
The two guys ahead of him are Mark Vientos, who has really not played enough, but he's been amazing. And Joey Ortiz, who you can make that argument, but he also has, you know, 100 fewer plate appearances than Alec Bohm. And then beyond that, it's like Donovan Solano, injured Max Muncy, like Matt Chapman, like McMahon, Austin Riley he's been better recently. But in my opinion, Alec Bohm is the deserving player in the National League. And it certainly did help that the Phillies fan base is fired up to vote for him. On to the outfield, Christian Yelich, Jurickson Profar, Fernando Tatis Jr. Very happy for Yelich, who like has shown that he is not done, right?
Not even
That's
close.
That's great. That's great.
Yeah, he's awesome. Obviously, that's another one where, you know, different than Ketel Marte, but similar thing. It's like, hey, man, when are you going to get back to being an MVP? He's been extremely open about how much that has not worn on him, but like he hasn't really hid from that. Like he understands that that's, you know, a standard that he set that he has not failed to recapture, you know, over the last 5 years. But this year, man, I mean, you know, the power isn't quite the same, but everything else, I mean, the dude's got a 400 on base, right? I mean, he's hitting 329. He is a one of the best hitters in baseball once again, and we probably should not have doubted his ability to do that, because the truth of Christian Yelich is that he was never really bad. It was just not one of the three best players in the league, and that was the standard he had set, and now he will be back starting an All-Star game, and I guess maybe playing center field, which is, I don't think, something he has done once this season. But who do you think will be playing center field?
So that's the thing, right? So the three outfielders, Profar, Tatis, and Yelich. Tatis is on the IL. He probably won't be there.
Yeah, that's true, right?
Profar, we've talked about it. What an unbelievable thing that
and
he
deserving.
Is.
And deserving. He's been one of the best players.
And deserving.
In
like, he is number one in war in National League outfielders, so on Fangraphs. Like, sure. I think that the... So I would probably say Brandon Nimmo will play center field and get the nod. You could make an argument for Jackson Merrill, but I would be more surprised for the league to kind of put him into that spot right away with another Padre. It might be fair to replace a Padre with a Padre.
Yeah.
However, I think it would be Nimmo. That's just my guess. I don't know if that's who I would pick, but that's who I think it will be. Congrats to Fernando Tatis Jr. Like, him being voted in by the fans is just a little bit of evidence that every year we're moving past him testing positive for PEDs just a little bit more and more as he re-ingratiates himself and doesn't do any more stupid stuff. The designated hitter for the National League, Japanese fella named Shohei Ohtani, because no freaking duh. Braves fans, I understand. Like, Marcelo Zuna, dude, like, it's, if you lose, this is very similar to what Yordan was dealing with in the American League. Like, you had a good season. That's cool. You're not Shohei Ohtani? Sorry. You know, that's just how it works.
Your best now, hope is to somehow get in Shohei's ear to one day start playing the outfield again. Otherwise, it's not happening. And that's fine. It's fine.
We've gone too long. Yeah. Those are the All-Star starters. Let's take a quick break. And when we return, we'll briefly touch on the home run derby field not taking shape, because we only have one confirmed participant. And then we'll give you the good, the bad, and the ugly. Corbicast, Jake Mintz, Jordan Schusterman. The Home Run Derby field, as of right now on July 5th at 9:46 a.m., is actually just Gunnar Henderson taking batting practice by himself. He is the only confirmed player in the Derby right now. We're a week and a half away. I'm sure there are other players that have yet to announce that MLB has reached out to ask, big stars who, you know, just haven't gotten around to saying, I'm doing it. But right now, it's literally just Gunnar. But the news that we got is who will be throwing to Gunnar Henderson. It will be Buck Britton, which sounds like I understand for those of you who are not Orioles fans, it sounds like a fake Orioles person that we conjured up between Buck Showalter and Zach Britton. But it is actually Zach Britton's brother, who is the manager for the AAA affiliate Norfolk Tides. He is the one throwing to Gunnar Henderson.
Yes, and this is someone who, I don't know if you've written explicitly about him, but he's a name that certainly showed up in Orioles stories that you've written over the past few years. He is a very instructive kind of player in the Orioles operation and them kind of coming out of this rebuild. And I'm interested in him because it's like, clearly he has this perfect, like it's perfect for the organization for Buck Britton to be in this role. However, like is he, especially as like a younger manager, just going to be the AAA manager forever? Probably not. But as long as he is, it's a nice guy to kind of have as almost he is like epitomizes the bridge between this amazing Orioles farm system and becoming a good Orioles major leaguer. And that is why it's not an accident that Gunnar Henderson, one of the great development stories, you know, wants to bring Buck Britton along, someone who is close with a lot of these players who have now graduated to Baltimore.
Right. When you are like the AAA Norfolk Tides are their own fascinating character in Major League Baseball right now in this big world, because there's just so much Orioles talent flowing through there and then going up and down from there. And so what I find super interesting about Buck Britton specifically, and I'm glad that he's going to get this moment to shine, is like when we see, you know, Heston Kjerstad or Colton Cowser or Connor Norby or Jackson Holliday go down to AAA and some of these guys come back up and succeed, there's so much development going on in AAA on site that we're not always getting to watch from our Major League Baseball lens. And Buck Britton is driving that part of the operation in a really important way, because you could imagine that if you demote a guy, they're going to be bummed out to go back to Norfolk, Virginia, no offense. And Buck Britton is there to almost act as like a soft landing, but also he's there to act as a trampoline for guys who can jump back up to the big leagues. And so people love that guy. I spent a lot of time around him in the Dominican when I was living there, and he was the manager of Escogido, the Dominican Winter League team. And so I think it'll be really cool that he will get his moment to shine. Hopefully we get some more confirmed participants over the weekend and we can talk a little bit more about the Derby next week. But until then, Jordan, we must lay back onto our number one bit, the good, the bad, and the ugly. One thing good from the week that was, one thing bad, and one thing damn ugly, bizarre, different, unique, and quirky. I will pick up the basketball and I will throw it to you.
My good this week is Jake Irvin. I just think this guy is quickly becoming one of the more underrated pitchers in the league. I don't know if he is going to be the all-star for the Washington Nationals, but I think what he has kind of done in his second year in the Nationals rotation, even more so than, you know, Mackenzie Gore having a nice year, is kind of a really exemplifies the steps forward that the Nationals organization has kind of made in helping their pitchers actually succeed at the major league level. He goes 8 scoreless with 1 hit allowed against the Mets yesterday. Then Jesse Winker hits a go-ahead home run, and the Nats are able to split the opportunity with the New York Mets this week at home. Jake Irvin's got a 2.80 ERA in 106 innings. And I just, you know, talking to Trevor Williams before the season, man, you know, one of our friends, he just said, he's like, yeah, Jake Irvin, he's the truth. He just, whatever you thought, as impressive as he was last year, even though the ERA wasn't great, he is going to be one of our best pitchers here. I was like, oh, really? Okay, let's see. And yeah, he's been every bit that. I don't know if he will be the all-star, but I think he deserves it. And it would be very cool to see the Nationals pitching staff rewarded with an all-star, because they don't suck. And it is because of their pitching staff. So there you go, Jake Irvin, you're good this week. What's your pick?
My good is Camilo Doval.
Ooh, okay.
Camilo Doval is the only active major leaguer who?
Who?
I'm pointing to you. Take a guess.
Oh, man. It's the only active major leaguer who has... No, that sounds wrong. I was going to say hasn't blown a save. I don't know who.
The only active major leaguer born on July 4th. Happy birthday to America and happy birthday to Camilo Doval, who yesterday threw a scoreless frame against the Atlanta Braves in Atlanta, striking out two, throwing 100, allowing one hit to Marcell Ozuna, because that's how things go. But yeah, I thought that was great. Camilo Doval, the one July 4th birthday.
That is very funny. Camilo Doval, who knows how patriotic he is, if he has American citizenship or not. All right, Jake.
You can be patriotic without American citizenship, Jordan. You need to open up your view.
No,
here,
you're right.
Okay?
You're right. You're right.
What is an American? I don't know.
That's fair. All right. My bad this week is a tweet, which I'm going to send you a screenshot of. I'm going to send that to you, a screenshot on Slack. Okay. It is a tweet from the Toledo Mudhens. And the reason I have a screenshot of it is because I had a feeling this was going to be deleted. All right. Now, normally the categories of deleted tweets are like insensitive jokes or like totally over the line references or just like bad whatever. Okay. This is not something where it's like, oh, let's cancel the admin for at Toledo Mudhens. However, I had a feeling it was going to be deleted. Here is why. The Toledo Mudhens tweeted a lineup graphic. Very standard for any baseball team, right? But particularly, you know, minor league team. Oh, here's who's playing for us tonight. And because of a combination of underperformance and injuries, the Toledo Mudhens lineup has a number of players who have appeared a good amount in the major leagues for the Tigers this year. However, when the Toledo Mudhens post their lineup, which features Parker Meadows, Javier Baez, Spencer Torkelson, and Matt Manning on the bump, and they caption it, "If you told me this was Detroit's lineup, I would believe you," with the eyes emoji. I think that the sentiment there, which was trying to like hype up the Mudhens and be like, yo, come check out the Mudhens, we got all these awesome big leaguers playing, it was an unintentional like epic self-own, which was a tough look for the, you know, major league franchise that this team, that you could look at the AAA line and be like, oh, it's just like the Tigers, and it's like, oh wait, that's the problem. So anyway, they ended up deleting this tweet and posting it again with some other nondescript caption, and I thought it was very funny, but also probably qualifies as bad.
Definitely bad, but again, no notes. You know, like, this is great. This is good that we get to experience it, but some poor, you know, not intern, because we know that social media people, they're not always interns, contrary to popular dumb belief on the internet. But somebody at the Toledo Mudhens had a bad day yesterday and or this week. And I'm very sorry about that, but this is still very funny. Jordan, my bad is the MLB All-Star Game uniforms. I know that you don't care about uniforms. I know you don't care. But, like, these kind of, they stink. They stink. Just keep it simple, stupid. I used to be a proponent of colorful pants in our game. I thought that was a good thing. I liked watching, you know, Cuban baseball highlights and seeing guys in green pajamas. I liked that. But we have gone too far in the other direction. One team, the American League, will be wearing a beige top and bottom with red. I actually think they're calling it coral accents. Whereas the National League will have a navy top and a navy bottom with like teal blue accents. Okay. The script on the front of the jersey is like old Wild West, which I do like. But I really do long for the days where all the players get to wear their uniforms. Now, remember, this is a sign that the All-Star Game and its importance and its role has changed. This used to be like the only opportunity where if you lived in an American League city to see National League players in their jerseys. And so they wore their jerseys because that's what they wanted to convey to people. Now we're wearing silly uniforms. I'm fine with wearing them during the Derby. This is a take that I know you don't care about, Jordan, but let's just do better. Like, we've done good enough with a lot of these City Connects. I like a lot of the City Connects. Let's just do better with these jerseys.
No, I agree. And I, again, even if we do just go back to wearing the actual ones, that would be fine with me. Yeah, no, I mean, it's pretty amazing how they keep managing to make some of these that just people are not in on. They're really, really not buying them. But yeah, we can do better. I agree with that. All right, let's go to UGLA. I'm pretty excited about my UGLA this week. Jake, do you know about a baseball player named Bobby Seymour?
No.
All right, so Bobby Seymour was a 13th round pick by the Tampa Bay Rays in 2021. He was a kind of a big, beefy first baseman at Wake Forest who could have maybe gotten drafted in 2020, but I don't know if you saw, there was a pandemic and the draft was really short. And so he went back for his senior year, hit 21 home runs. But again, this is just kind of like a first base DH only. So it's like, whatever. How good is he really? The Rays take him in the 13th round. He's kind of climbed the minor leagues slowly, having a really nice season he recently got promoted to AAA. But the reason I'm bringing Bobby Seymour up is because at some point last year, if you look at his transaction log and you look at his kind of anytime he starts being referenced by, you know, Rays accounts and whatnot, Bobby Seymour is now going by Bob. Officially, on his roster, he is Bob Seymour. This is a very big deal because we have not had a Bob in baseball on their as their roster name since, I believe, 2010 when Bob Howry, the reliever, retired. I know Bob Wickman was right before that. I wrote a very long thing when we worked at MLB in January of 2019 about how Bobs have gone completely extinct. They are now all Bobbies or Robert or Roberts or Rob or Robbies. Bob has essentially been dead as a name among major league players. I know John Boyes has also did a very lengthy piece about Bobs in sports going extinct. I think that also was back in 2019. But if Bob Seymour makes the big leagues, I mean, this is a huge deal. This is the name. It's like, oh, Bob, of course, everyone's named Bob. No, no one's named Bob. It's the opposite of that. And if Bob Seymour can make it, I don't know if it's going to happen this year, even though he is in AAA now. This would be a historic, historic moment in baseball to have a Bob back in the big leagues. Big League Bob, I'm rooting for you, man.
Major League Bob.
Mm-hmm. That's what it stands for. What is your UGLA this week?
I got a story for you. Jordan, I want you to turn the clock back to 1964 in Baltimore, Maryland, July 4th, 1964. This is a story I learned about yesterday, and it is absolutely hilarious. So in Baltimore, before the Inner Harbor got like refurbished and became the place to be, the big fireworks show in Baltimore was at Memorial Stadium, where the Orioles played for a long time, okay? And from 1954, when the Orioles showed up for the next decade, like the Orioles were very good for a lot of that time, and the game would finish and then they'd do the fireworks. And they had a huge crowd every year on July 4th because that's where the big fireworks show was. So there was like a big problem in 1963 with this fireworks show where there was a delay and people were booed. And so the following year, the city and the Orioles agreed to a curfew for the game where, like, if the game did not end by a certain time, it would be suspended so that they could do the fireworks show. I mean, what are the chances, Jordan? What are the chances that the game, which began at 5:30 p.m., wouldn't be over by 8:15 p.m.? Okay? That's actually really not that much time. It's 2 hours and 45 minutes, which I guess back at that time was
in the 60s. Yeah, our game, time of game. I mean, I could look that up quickly, what time of game was then, but yeah, it was definitely under that.
So no inning would start after 8:15. However, the game ended at 8:30 p.m. after nine innings with the score tied 6-6. The logistics people must have been like, are you freaking kidding me? A tie game of all days. But instead of playing extra innings, they suspended the game after nine innings so that they could do the fireworks show at Memorial Stadium. So the game officially ended in a tie. It was not ever resumed. It was just made up at a future date, just from the beginning. However, the statistics from that game counted.
How's that possible? But the results of the game did not end up in the standings because it was a tie.
The result of the game did not end up in the standings because it was a tie. The O's and the A's would make up the game as part of a September doubleheader. So the game was played in the future. However, the statistics from the game did indeed count. Boog Powell hit a home run. Brooks Robinson hit an RBI. Like, those all existed. Now, I'm reading from an old Baltimore Sun story. New rules adopted in 2007 prevent a game ending in a tie. If those rules had been in place in 1964, the O's and A's would have resumed the game the next day.
Man. I mean, it's interesting because, yeah, you go back and you look and it just lists them as having... It counts it as a tie, or at least on Baseball Reference, where it says that the 1964 Orioles played 163 games, which I guess they did. Which is, man, that is really something. Yeah, I imagine that. But I don't know. Do you think this was a situation where at the time it was like, yeah, this is something that could happen in the '60s in baseball. Like, what do we, you know, people weren't complaining, or there were at least a couple people that were like, must have been pissed.
Like, this is crazy. It's unacceptable.
Yeah. Although I guess
I should ask my mom.
Yeah.
You know, she was like about 9 to 10 months old at this point.
I was going to say, I don't know how well she would remember this, but it seems like a good thing to ask her about. That is amazing. I love that.
Can you imagine that today? Can you imagine that happening today? Like, it's just tied in the ninth and MLB is like, you know what? Screw it. Fireworks.
Nah. You know, it's interesting. So who are they playing? The Royals?
The A's.
Kansas City A's. Sorry, that's what I mean. Right. Well, of course, Kansas City. I wonder if I was looking at the standings. At this point, the Orioles are the best team in the league and the A's are the worst team in the league. So, like, comfortably. So I wonder if they were just like, eh, who cares? This is we don't need to finish this one. We know where this one is going. So, pretty funny. That is very ugly. Thank you for sharing. Very July 4th themed. A lot of July 4th action on this July 5th episode of Baseball Barbercast. Let's look ahead, Jake, to the weekend before we say goodbye. We mentioned it earlier. I agree with you. This is probably the most excited I have been to watch Red Sox-Yankees in a long time. Normally, I'm dreading this. Normally, when I see that it's Red Sox-Yankees on Sunday Night Baseball, I'm like, great, can't wait to not watch that. However, this is not that, right? Red Sox are, I believe, 5.5 back of the Yankees, in which is still a substantial, you know, gap, but, you know, series win this weekend, especially in New York, and this could get a little dicey here for the old Yanks of the Bronx. But that's definitely one that I'm sure most people will be watching than any other series you're looking forward to this weekend.
Phillies Braves, baby. Phillies Braves. Yeah. A preview, I mean, this is whatever. And a rematch.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, the Phillies are still up 9 games on Atlanta. It seems awfully unlikely that they are going to be caught. However, this is really, I guess, one of an opportunity to at least make things somewhat interesting, but not really. So that is interesting there. 3 AL series I'm watching: Rays at Rangers, Astros at Twins, Blue Jays at Mariners. A bunch of teams that are differing levels of the American League postseason picture. Obviously, all you know, interdivision. So those matchups are very interesting. The Rays kind of showing some signs of life. Interesting to see them. Brewers at Dodgers. Is interesting. Savali will make his Brewers debut, Aaron Savali, tonight against Glasnow, and then that Paul Skeens fellow will be making a start against the New York Mets tonight at home in Pittsburgh. So that is very exciting as well. So that's what I'm looking forward to this weekend. Anything else before we say goodbye?
I'm headed to Trenton tomorrow to see Rintaro Sasaki play.
Ooh, okay. Well, we've talked about him before, and we will talk about him next week. You can report back on how the big man is doing in Trenton. Very, very interesting. You can email us at baseballbarbercast@gmail.com. Everyone have a wonderful weekend. Thank you to our producer, Hillary Georgie. We appreciate her filling in for Andrew Hartz, and we'll talk to you all next week. Thanks for listening.